Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. This week, we have a very interesting show. We're going to be talking about customer experience changes, customer journeys, the way technology has changed the way we interact, consumers' expectations, how they're shifting. It's a great show. We've got some great talent lined up for the show as well. So we're very fortunate to have some real leaders in this space with us. So let me introduce the first of those. James Moed. James is from IDEO. Hey, how are you, James? So tell me, what's your official title at IDEO?
My official title is Portfolio Lead or Portfolio Director for Financial Service Design.
Right. So you are the guy in the financial service space. You cover the Europe area. Is that right?
Yeah, I work with a lot of our teams in Europe. But, you know, IDEO, we have about 12 offices around the world. So I think we're often sort of touching on different types of financial service work in other countries and learning from each other. It's very collaborative, you know.
Well, that's what it should all be about, this sort of learning process, right? So how long have you been involved in the, let's call it the customer experience or user experience space? I know you're in product design as well, but.
Yeah, sure. I mean, IDEO, of course, has been in this space for, you know, going on 25 years. But I think we shifted from being a product design company to a product and service and experience design company probably about 20 years ago when it became clear that you couldn't just sell a product. You had to understand the whole experience around it because, you know, as more and more things were being created cheaply in China, that's how people realized that, you know, companies and clients realized that to compete, you can't just have a thing. You had to understand the experience around that thing. And that's how we landed in things like financial services and healthcare and other things like that.
So, you know, we go back, you know, human computer interaction, you know, goes back a few decades now. But when would you say the industry realized that experience design was something, you know, a field of its own? When do you think that became that emerged?
The industry of the financial services industry, you mean?
Oh, well, just generally.
Just industry. Oh, wow. I mean, it definitely happened before. So, you know, by the time I began working in design and sort of moving my skills over to this space, which was about 10 years ago, it was already becoming something important. I think different industries began to realize its importance as market changed and as their consumers became more selective, right? So certainly retailers began to pick up on it first, right? And then retailers and certainly as internet companies became popular, they realized pretty soon that you couldn't just throw a lot of lines of data on a page of people, but you needed to create something that they could interact with. And bit by bit, I think what's interesting about working in a place like IDEO is we begin to see different industries come online to realize that, the way a customer interacts with us, whether that's in a place, on a screen, or other places, actually affects, you know, what they think of us and whether or not they want to spend their time or money with us. And so financial services, you know, began to come on board maybe about 6 or 7 years ago. But now we see folks like shipping and certainly government services and all these sort of what you would think is sort of, you know, like stiff industries that never really thought in an empathetic way about their customers are beginning to realize that experience matters.
So, how have customers' expectations changed, particularly as a result of technology like the iPad and multi-touch and, you know, the app world and so forth, you know, this instant feedback loop that we're getting? How do you think this has raised customers' expectation of the experience overall, or at least on the digital side?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is that those, as you sort of, alluded to in your question, customers' expectations of what they get from one experience are totally affected by what they get from others. And so I think certainly when I work with financial service, organizations, it's sometimes a bit of a wake-up call to realize that their customers are not just comparing them against other banks or other payment companies, but they're comparing them against great retailers or even a hotel experience and things like that. So what we'll see is that people are beginning to on a very basic level, they're beginning to expect more simplicity, things that are more graphic and more visual. They're looking for things that are uncluttered. And particularly, this is really relevant to anything dealing with money, is they're expecting fewer steps, right? They in loads of other great user experiences, other industries, interaction designers and others are cutting out the steps that it takes for you to get to your goal. And bit by bit, financial service companies are beginning to learn that. But I guess what I think is the most interesting is you begin to see new metaphors, right? So, we did some work on something called the virtual wallet for this bank called PNC, a few years ago. And there was this part of the visualization was a bar that showed all your money together. And it was sort of, a money bar rather than showing different accounts. But that bar itself was inspired by looking at the way young people played video games, right? So those interactions create new metaphors of how we begin to expect to see data and interact with things. So just like you might have a life bar in a video game, it begins to inform how you might want to see other things in your life. So the interactions and the immediate feedback are important, but also the visual metaphors begin to change what we expect.
So that's interesting. I mean, you borrow from other industries, they sort of influence you. You've talked about the game, sort of game design and so forth. In respect to the design process itself, what's a typical engagement that IDEO does look like when, in terms of this experience design process? How long does it take? Who's involved in it? I know that's like how long is it?
Yeah,
string,
but, yeah, exactly.
Talk about a couple of different projects you're involved in and what the, how they're constructed.
Yeah, well, I'd say, a typical project. I mean, so, we often talk about design and great innovation as being at the intersection of what's desirable, what's feasible, and what's viable, right? And so, whereas a lot of other innovation processes start with what's feasible, start with technology, and a bunch start with start with what the business is after. We always start with people, with observing their behaviors, right? So, I would say, there was some work that we did years ago that became pretty well known for Bank of America, and it ultimately developed this product called Keep the Change. And the first thing was that Bank of America came to us and said, what can we do to get moms and families saving more and saving more consistently? And so the first step of that process isn't just to do a bunch of market research or isn't just to sort of read a bunch of data, but to go and spend time at home, right? With moms, with families, watching their behavior. And I guess the most important thing about that is you begin to stop just observing what their transactions are, begin to see the role that money and various things play in their wider life and their wider values, right? So that means, meeting not tons of people, but, maybe 10 or 20 and spending 2 to 3 hours in their lives, going, doing errands with them, watching them watching them as they budget, watching them as they interact with other families, and seeing the bigger needs besides just whether they need to, write a check in this way or that way. And I think what was interesting about that particular thing is that we observed, a bunch of moms, and we would saw that a bunch did things like they would round up a bill to a utility company when they paid it, and they would round up a bill for $27.50. So it would round it up to $30, in part because it made life easier for them. A lot of folks don't like math, and in part because they thought they were getting a bit of a credit, right? So we noticed this sort of rounding up behavior. And then as you move into the next part of the process, you say, hey, we heard that story. And that is, interesting related to a technology that we saw. And that's interesting related to something else that we saw in a different industry. And you begin to see these opportunities come up. And from those opportunities, that's where you start brainstorming and coming up with a whole range of different ideas, different ways to execute on the kind of needs that we saw. And so one of the things that came out of that process was realizing that there is a need to make the act of saving, a lot more intuitive and a lot easier. And we also saw that we noticed from a lot of moms that they actually valued the act of saving, feeling proud that they could save, far more than they valued any particular interest rate. And that led to that product called Keep the Change, which basically takes a debit card payment, rounds it up to the nearest dollar, and puts the remaining change in a savings account. And that product ended up being, you know, coming from that initial insight through to opportunities and brainstorming and ultimately executing and imagining various scenarios around it, that product became something that was massively successful. And not just with moms. I think it was like about 10 million new customers, about $3 billion in new savings, all from that initial observation of just how people act and manage their money in everyday life.
So how long did that project run for, approximately? Do you know?
I'm trying to remember. I think, you know, a typical project, you know, again, can run anywhere from sort of, you know, 8 to 16 weeks, but that's just to get us to the initial concepts. Whereas the actual exit, I mean, I think what you probably,
execution,
you know, what you
takes as long as it takes. Yeah.
It takes as long as it takes, but it's also about iteration, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, sure.
Rather than just acting like a funnel, you know, it's we rudely occasionally call this a colon process, right? Where we sort of come up with lots of different observations and we bring them down to a few key opportunities. We see those opportunities in terms of lots of different ideas and bring them back to a few ideas that we think are going to work. Then we come up with lots of ways to design those ideas and bring them back to a few designs that will work from a technology point of view, a design point of view, and from a sort of an organizational point of view, right? So we're always going out and coming back in to come to the ideas that work best with users.
So we've got, you know, in the few minutes we got before we get a break, let's explore, you know, you talk a lot about your behaviors and, you know, putting yourself in the mix, seeing how people interact and so forth. You know, in respect to banking and financial services, we do have some habits in place now in terms of the way we do this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, how do you see the engagement of financial services changing in the next couple of years? Now, what's going to be the sort of expectations or demands on financial service organizations in respect to placing the product or the service in people's lives, do you think? And how's that going to affect the way we design and build this stuff?
I mean, I think the one thing that's coming up is the realization that people don't make their financial decisions at the bank, right? They make them at the car dealership, at the hospital, right? They make them in the moment. And so one of the biggest changes we're going to need to see is financial tools and insights and apps and things like that that live with you in the moment of decision. Right? And then that can be an app, you know, that helps you. So, oh, I just went and bought some beer, that app that immediately asks you, hey, you spent a lot of money on beer. Do you want to, you know, track that cost? But it can also be something more nuanced where you go to the hospital and they actually can tap into – you give them the right to tap into your bank account and help you make a really balanced decision over how much you need to pay for a certain procedure and how you might budget that over time. And so I think we're going to see an explosion of apps and specific type tools, not just because apps are cool and APIs are interesting, but because that's how people really think about money. They need money and money decisions to act differently in different contexts. And so over the next few years, I believe and I hope that we see a flowering of different financial tools that are built around different needs and contexts in people's lives.
Right. So those needs and context, those needs which trigger and the context, you know, how's that going to change the way? Because right now it's all about advertising, right? We're selling the product. Is that connection to the customer, the engagement, that journey, is that going to become as critical as or even more critical than just purely advertising the product?
It's going to have to, right? I mean, I think if you're thinking of something that is, you know, is a real danger for disruption in this industry is, imagine what happens when we're able to switch banks, right? As easily as we switch mobile telephone operators, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, as we know, I know a lot of banks, you know, they make money when we save a lot of money and they make money when we take out loans, pretty big loans. But the everyday banking, right, the everyday money management, the stuff that actually takes up about, you know, maybe 90% of our financial lives is for a lot of organizations a loss leader. Right. And so what's going to happen when you're able to switch banks? So suddenly all that time they've invested in helping you manage your everyday money no longer pays off for them. Right. So banks are going to have to be much more engaging. Right, they're going to have to make things matter to us in a much more everyday way, they're going to have to come up with a business model that that incentivizes them to treat our everyday money needs in a way that's really compelling for us. Because once that account switch becomes simpler, a lot of the business model is going to need to be questioned.
So, James, listen, we'd love to have you stick around for the last segment where we can talk a little bit about the future 5 to 10 years out. Can you hang around and participate in the latter part of the show?
Yeah, looking forward to it. Great guests.
Great. So after the break, we'll be speaking to Lynn Teo. We'll be back just after the break.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
Do you, like most Americans, spend the majority of your life at work? Are you making it the joy that it deserves to be, or are you feeling drained and unfocused? Tune in to A Great Place to Work with hosts Kirk Kaufman and Dr. Kathy Sorensen. Your hosts have more than 30 years of experience in workplace consulting and are ready to bring you the secrets and success stories of businesses who are making their business a great place to work. Listen every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and enjoy a better workplace and a better life.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. This week we're talking customer engagement, customer experience, service design, this sort of new competency that struck up not just in financial services, of course, but globally in really any customer interfacing, consumer interfacing service industry that's happening at the moment. You might think of it starting with app design or design of customer service channels, but it's now embedded in everything we do when it comes to service delivery of the business. Well, it's great to have with us Lynn Teo. Lynn, you're from McCann. Tell us about your role and tell us about what you do.
Okay. So, hi, everyone, and hi, Brett. Good to talk to you. So, as the first chief experience officer at McCann Erickson, my role was very esoteric in a traditional advertising construct, but I also was brought on board to help to shape the evolution of advertising, acknowledging kind of where the digital world is headed now and that consumers have many more ways to interact with brands. So that's my short form description for you, Brett.
So how, McCann is probably better known as as an advertising agency. So how is the business changing in respect to customer experience? How's that changing the nature of the advertising and engagement business for a company like McCann?
Well, the way I see it is that there are two elements that help a consumer engage with a brand. In the most traditional way of thinking about it, you put forward a marketing communications or a strong message that resonates with the consumer, either from an emotional standpoint or it strikes a truth. of that particular brand. But I think the world that we live in now is so much more complicated, where the messaging alone itself can't deliver against the engagement that you need with the consumer. So it's almost a world in which a promise that's being made needs to now be delivered. And I think that's where the rubber hits the road, and that's where all agencies, not just traditional, but I think all agencies have to start to enlarge their footprint so that they're able to cut across different elements of the consumer's experience in a much more holistic way, from awareness all the way to, you know, the right trigger points, all the way through to what happens when they're maybe in a store. So I think what we're looking at is the shift in the perception of what user experience is or what consumer experiences are. So it really cuts across different channels.
Right. So, you know, there's a lot more expectations of immediacy and I need this solved now rather than, hey, I've seen an ad and yeah, I know you can do it, but I'm not going to, you know, for example, in banking, I'm not going to walk down the branch to do this. I just want it fixed. You know, that immediacy element. Yeah.
Yes, there's immediacy and there's also this acknowledgement of things coming together and that you have to engage with the consumer in whatever way he or she wants to engage with the brand at a point in time.
I think that's interesting because if you say, well, we can only engage with you this way and that doesn't solve the customer's problem at the time, however they will engage with you then. The likelihood of actually closing on the promise of that ad, for example, that message may be reduced.
Let me
ask you this question. You know, what makes a good customer experience designer? You know, what do you look for in respect to when you're looking at building the team or you're looking at resources to work with? What do you look for that really makes someone really good at this?
Okay, well, I'll boil it down to three things that I've always looked for. One is there needs to be this almost insatiable curiosity, because I think all good experienced designers need to be curious about the way the world works around them, and that they come into every situation with fresh eyes, not bringing any assumptions to the table. Because I think only when you do that are you able to see new opportunities as they are. So that's the first one. Mm. Another quality that I look for is empathy. And I think more and more so, you're hearing empathy come up in a lot of conversations around careers of today. And I think we can't escape from the fact that, you know, at the heart of it, consumers are human beings. They want to be heard. They want to be connected. Connected to a brand kind of in an emotional way. And, you know, when problems are not solved for a consumer, that creates a lot of frustration for a consumer. So having that empathy, I think, helps position an experienced designer so they know that they're always kind of in service of the consumer, doing things in ways that will solve problems that they face. So that's the second one. The third one I would say is kind of keeping up to date with the changing pace of technology, and also, you know, kind of what are the latest trends? Because until you're kind of up to snuff on that, you know, you won't really be able to design the appropriate experiences because you're not, you know, kind of aware of the platforms that people are interacting with. So those are the three top things that I look for in experienced designers.
Wow. So, you know, James and yourself have both described this, what sounds like a very dynamic industry. It's been, you know, for the last, 5 to 10 years, it's been constant change and we're confronted with new technologies, as you say, and new ways to engage customers. So this sounds like a very dynamic area. How are organizations generally adapting to these new methods of engaging, particularly, you know, obviously this show's focused on the financial services space, but you could speak more generally. How are organizations going about adapting to these new engagement paradigms?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think organizations need to constantly challenge themselves to, you know, kind of realign their capabilities, add to their capabilities, And I would even go so far as to say to break any existing models of how teams work, right? So I think in any industry, not just in advertising, not just in agencies, any industry will have kind of predisposed ways in which teams work, right? So I think being brave enough to say that, you know what, maybe that model doesn't work anymore. Maybe pairing up a copywriter with an art director alone isn't working, or simply pairing up an engineer with a systems engineer alone does not work anymore, because that was very much the model, you know, in my earlier right. days when I was working at Bell Labs. So I think right. the win here is in bringing disparate skill sets to the table, but being able to orchestrate the team so that everyone knows that their opinion is sought and valued, but there needs to also be a framework in which how teams function. So that's where I think the organization comes into play, because you have to set the stage. You need to provide some broad guardrails for how roles may take a dominant, you know, certain roles may play a primary role at certain phases, and then you kind of hand off. It's like a baton. You hand off to the next person, and maybe later on, a social strategist kind of takes the ball and runs with it. So, you know, it sounds simple, but I think there's a lot of pre-planning that organizations need to do to ensure that all the new skills that they bring to the table are being leveraged the right way.
So this sounds like very much a multidisciplinary field where you might have different types of experts or different experience brought to bear to really create a great result for the customer. So given that, mm-hmm. and given the structure we've typically had, which is, you know, we've typically had, you know, someone dedicated to the web channel and building that out, and we've got the mobile guys over here, and we've got the call center guys over here, and we've got the advertising guys over here, and the product guys here, and the you know, the guys who look after the branch over here, and it's all these silos.
And, yeah.
You know, how is, as we start working on this new paradigm of an organization that really is built to serve the customer and generates consistently great, you know, customer engagement experience, how does that change the way the organization's structured?
Well, I think breaking out of the silos is the first step. I like the notion of kind of cutting across organizations. So are there certain skills or certain capabilities that, you know, are just kind of in their DNA to kind of run across the different silos to make sure that person A is speaking to person B and that the baton is being passed? It's a tough one, right? Because everyone in an organization would like to imagine that they're equipped to do that. And I think that's where agencies and organizations have to ask themselves that tough question, which is, you know, we're living in a complex world. I need people who can delve in data and complexity, but I also need people who can communicate and kind of in a very crisp way. So I think the key here is not being afraid to break it open, you know, have maybe certain departments whose sole purpose is to cut across the different silos, and that's an important role. So if that breaks, then we know we're not harnessing the benefits of each individual. So I think the call here is for organizations to be brave and to try different combinations, and to, I would even say, maybe abandon some of the pre-existing power structures in an organization, because we need to reorient everyone around the consumer, because only then will all companies, agencies win, right? So it requires a lot of change management, and it requires just a lot of empowerment of the people who've been appointed in some ways to help make that change.
So just, we've got about a minute before the break. You know, how would you incentivize an organization, or what metrics would you put in place to really create this momentum behind this type of structure?
I would say there needs to be an internal reward system, or maybe even a performance system that kind of ties maybe compensation benefits to how you're working with new teams, you know. So, you know, maybe breaking out of those teams is how you're incented. So maybe there's a constant shift of who your partners are as you tackle these problems. So the more variety you demonstrate in the way that you act and the way you interact, you know, the more you kind of pick up these points as you go along. I think companies have to get creative here, you know, not bound by existing performance evaluations.
Fantastic, Lynn. Well, thanks for your input. Please stick around. We'll get you and James and Jim, our next guest, talking on the last segment about the future, what it's going to look in look like in 5 to 10 years. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back after the break with Jim Morales.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
Do you, like most Americans, spend the majority of your life at work? Are you making it the joy that it deserves to be, or are you feeling drained and unfocused? Tune in to A Great Place to Work with hosts Kurt Kaufman and Dr. Kathy Sorensen. Your hosts have more than 30 years of experience in workplace consulting and are ready to bring you the secrets and success stories of businesses who are making their business a great place to work. Listen every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and enjoy a better workplace and a better life.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We're talking customer experience design and customer engagement. Our final guest on the show this week is Jim Morales. Jim, tell us about the organization you work with and your role there.
Yeah, I'm with the Senior Vice President of Corporate Development for Direct and Digital Marketing at New Control, which is a marketing service organization headquartered in Chicago with offices in San Francisco. Also, I'm the publisher of the Bank Marketing Strategy blog. My firm works with financial institutions to build direct marketing communications that acquire, grow, and retain relationships, customer relationships.
Okay, so you know you're a self-professed marketing expert. You run a great blog that is very well respected in the financial services space. So tell me, in respect to this shift in engagement, you talked about social there. You talk about research and behavior and, you know, long-term engagement of customers. This doesn't sound purely like marketing anymore. How is engagement changing the discipline or the field of marketing based on all of these new technologies and these new research areas?
You know, it's interesting. I think the primary change is a complete disruption of the sales funnel. where in the past people would go into a branch to inquire about services, and they may go to three or four branches in their local neighborhood. Most of the shopping right now is being done online. A lot of the preliminary shopping and even the decision making is being done online and through the advice of others, with the branch being the last place they go. And while consumers still show by research from Gallup and others that many customers still prefer to go to the branch to open accounts, I think our research shows that some of that may be because the banks have not done a really good job of building online account opening capabilities. But in addition, I think the biggest change is that we need to reach out to customers before they walk in the branch, do more inquisitive work with the insights we can collect from the standpoint of customer insight, both internal to the bank and external, and build the sales process way before we had to, where now we're having to do this online before we do it through the branch.
Okay, so you know these skill sets that we're looking for previously, you know, advertisers and marketing staff within the business, you know, really had a schedule or a calendar of media buy or campaigns that they would run throughout the year. It would maybe in January they would advertise mortgages, in February as small business loans, in March it was credit cards. But, you know, what you're saying is that customers obviously don't buy those products only in those months. So how is the budget around the way you sell products and the way people are marketing those engagements changing? Is the campaign itself disappearing, or what do you think is happening?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because I think the thing I've seen the most, and again, a lot of times when we have these discussions on these kind of programs, we're really talking about the bigger banks. Unfortunately, you know, you're talking about the majority of the banks being much smaller banks that might not have as good of access to customer information. But to your point, we're seeing more and more of the budget dollars going towards what we'll call event-based or life cycle-based marketing. So when you first open the account, a lot of resources are going towards that initial welcome in the first 90 days of engagement. And then as you go further into the engagement, what's happening is we're taking the information that we have available, and we're trying to do more marketing around the behaviors of the customer. So it may be purchase behaviors, it may be account behaviors, it may be even behaviors in the social media area, where we can get a better indication as to what the customer is doing and when. And, you know, with the ultimate goal being to reach out to the customer in the channel they prefer at the time that they're about to make a decision, with the media that is going to be most likely to appeal to them. And that's a big shift from what has happened in the past with financial institutions, where, as you said, a lot of it was campaign-based. There's still some of that going on, but the real revenue benefits are coming from being able to reach those customers at the time of decision, be it a life stage change such as a move or a birth or a marriage, or through a financial change, which you can indicate through purchase behavior.
Right. You know, I was doing some very interesting research with the Central European team of Deloitte over the last couple of months. And one of the things we looked at around purchase behavior was as the typical credit card, how people make the decision. And it was very interesting to see that about one third of the people who ended up getting or applying for a credit card, one third of the audience, said that the reason for them applying for a credit card was a change in employment. Either they got promoted and so they thought, well, now I can afford a credit card, or they lost their job and they said, well, you know, I better apply for this credit card while I've still got a good credit rating with the bank, because I'm going to need some emergency cash until I get a new job. Now, intuitively, this is not how marketers would think about selling a credit card, but it's a behavioral trigger that became very clear. I mean, this is one third of customers were buying a card or applying for a credit card based on a change in job. So how do we find out those types of behavioral triggers or those correlations in this decision making process, so we can build an engagement to that, Jim? You know, what's the competency, or how's the research done that come up with that type of conclusion?
Well, that's interesting, because for marketers, I think that Lynn and James would both agree that, especially with financial institution marketers, you have a very careful balance between what we do know about customers and what we want to reveal to the customers we know about them. And I think that's because there's so much information out there, so much available insight that you have to be cautious about the big brother, even especially with the financial institutions. But when you talk about employment changes and things of this nature, this comes out in not just social media conversations, which can be tracked, but more often it's being able to be found through their digital behavior and through their online behavior. So, you know, people make changes to their LinkedIn relationship, or they may make changes and may be searching out other items, because when a person gets a new job, it's not just a credit card they're out there buying. In many cases, they're buying a new vehicle. They may be buying furniture. They may be changing their residency. And all these things, in addition to the change of employment, are things that we can use as marketers to reach out to customers. And, you know, a lot of times the consumer gets concerned about all we know about them. But what this information allows us to do is to avoid what we call junk mail or junk email or junk digital mail.
And be a little more targeted and personalized, right?
Exactly. And what's interesting, Brett, is that consumers are used to this. I think James said earlier today that, you know, you look at the best marketers out there, digital marketers, the Amazons, the Apples, the Best Buy, and others. That's what consumers are setting the bar at. That's what they expect. And they expect the bank, who's supposed to know more about them than probably anybody, to even do a better job. And unfortunately, research shows that banks still are doing a very bad job of targeting and being able to look at information they have and target effectively. In fact, 53% of consumers researched by Gallup said that they were marketed a product they already had, which is inexcusable in a time where we have this information available. So, you know, to your point, when you look at change in employment behavior and being able to look at, again, social media and digital media, to be able to look at those things that have that indication, what it's actually doing is not only giving the bank a better chance of marketing effectively to the consumer, but the consumer getting marketing that's much more applicable to their personal behavior.
So, you know, we've discussed the marketing competency, but generally speaking, marketing's been about pushing out a message to try and stimulate a response. But the way you're describing it, it sounds more like you place the product or the service in the customer's life when they need it, and you pull them into the experience. So this is quite a different competency. This is not so much a messaging strategy as it is and understanding where to place the product in the customer's life and pulling them into an engagement. This sounds like a very different type of skill set to the traditional marketer we see in a bank today. Would you agree?
You know, you're exactly right. I mean, I think, you know, some of the best technology being used right now and most effective results we're getting as a company at New Control is using digital retargeting tools, which actually takes your search behavior and is able to process that and determine if we should be placing an ad on your computer to get better information. You take on top of that CRM retargeting, which actually matches up digital addresses with physical addresses, and we can actually take a direct mail program and follow that up with digital communication that reinforces the communication that you're doing through what I'll call traditional or old school direct mail. But I think you're right. I think what's going to become more and more important for financial institutions is building content. Because when they're doing their search behavior, you know, things such as short-form videos, other forms of content media are going to be much more effective in getting people to actually open their eyes to what you have to offer. And as you said, moving much more from a pull marketing to a push marketing. Content delivery, I think, you know, a lot of the best financial institutions out there, you can just do a simple search and you can see how well they're doing at getting their positioning front and center and localized.
Sounds like the budget mix changes significantly as well, because it goes away from pure advertising to, as you say, more content driven and things like that.
And you know, honestly, we're just touching the surface with regard to mobile. You know, there's very few financial institutions out there that are using the mobile capabilities and the geolocational capabilities, which opens up just a whole new gamut of opportunity and makes it even more effective from the standpoint of the where and what when.
Right. So, Jim, that is a great introduction to our final segment because we can start talking about what it's going to look like over the next 5 to 10 years. So stick around. After the break, we'll have James Moed and Lynn Teo all participating in discussion about what it's going to look like in 5 to 10 years from now. We'll be back right after this break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
What are the reasons that over 3/4 of small businesses fail within 3 years? Why do 70% of U.S. women-owned businesses make less than $50,000 a year? What causes mid-sized companies to stagnate? Although today many fundamentals of business remain the same, there are critical current changes that are not being acknowledged, and the result is costly. Tune in to Moving Forward with host Jen Sabin. We'll discuss the core reasons and plans of action to keep your business moving forward. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Business.
We're hearing more and more about the cloud and how we're using the cloud in our daily lives, whether we're aware of it or not. How can the cloud help your business? Join Bonnie D. Graham every Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time for In the Cloud with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel, and learn how to make your business soar to new heights. In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait, they just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynard. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks. You're back with your host, Brett King. We have James Moed from IDEO. We have Lynn Teo from McCann and Jim Morales from New Control. So, James, let me throw this back to you. Put your futurist hat on now, 5 to 10 years out. You know, what is engagement going to look like for, you know, day-to-day banking or financial services? How's this mix going to change?
Well, I mean, I think that in 5 to 10 years, we're finally going to have a new business model for everyday banking that is separate from the way businesses run for long-term savings or big lending, et cetera. There's going to be a whole new type of business model of banking that's built around helping people manage their everyday money, and that means it's going to be a lot more personal, right? So that means that there's going to be an integration between what our sort of everyday budgeting looks like, linked to what we're spending on. Stores and shops and all sorts of retailers will be using that data to, in almost on a minute-to-minute basis, be giving us ways to save better, to spend better, and the integration between what you might think of as like a checking account and the way we interact with retailers and people and folks that we're loyal to will become much, much more integrated. And then based on even more types of personal data, we'll see how that affects things like lending as well. So right now we have these algorithms that determine who can borrow from whom. But as we know more about – as organizations know more about us and as we are able to connect more with each other, I think we'll see forms of lending where people who know each other can create communities of ways to lend each other money, because in many ways they know the – credit of people in their network much better than say a big organization does. So I kind of think that we're going to see new business models that create interactions that feel much more personal, much more related to our own data and our own behaviors, and make money and offer services in ways that the standard universal bank can't even conceive of right now.
Wow, sounds very interesting. Lynn, what are your thoughts? What's it going to look like in 10 years' time, and how does that change the way we respond as organizations?
I'm going to focus a little bit more on the retail side of things to complement the banking story. I think that the common saying that you can, between cheaper, faster, and better, that you can only pick two, I think the next 5 to 10 years will allow consumers to have it all. And I think it's clear why things will be cheaper because of efficiencies and the use of technology. But I think better is where I want to hang my hat on. And I think in the retail space, better for me means totally challenging the manufacturing model and giving me as a consumer the ability to hyper-personalize everything that I need to buy, everything that I maybe didn't think I want to buy, but I'm suddenly opening myself up to this very direct interaction with the manufacturer of a product. So if I want to buy a pair of shoes, I can get it customized with the right embellishments and the right color, and it's going to be at my doorstep in a fraction of time. And I think it's that immediate gratification that's going to be a very exciting phase in retail, and it's going to blow open the boundaries between countries as well, where we're no longer limited by resources in the U.S., but you're going to have this kind of global economy happening at scale. I think it's going to be pretty fun for retail.
Very, very interesting. You know, we've started to see this with Bitcoin, how this sort of breaks the barriers of typical regulation. And as you say, you know, once you get that engagement model and you focus on the person, then the geographical boundaries don't necessarily make as much sense, which the regulators are really going to be challenged by that. But I think you're spot on. Jim, what about yourself? Well, you know, let take us out 5 to 10 years and put your marketing services hat on here. You know, what sort of experiences are we going to be creating?
Well, I'm one who says 5 to 10 years, it's going to be hard to guess because the speed of change has been so amazing lately. But I'll say somewhere in the future, in the near future probably, more than less, I think we're going to see much more movement towards in banking and in bank marketing, seamless simplicity. And what I mean by that, and James brought up in his first comments around one click, what can I do in a seamless way that almost replicates and thinks on my behalf what I need and when I need it. It's amazing what happens when you go online and you find that you're immediately getting marketing to you right now based on your travels through the internet and where you are. But when you start talking about wearable technology, when you talk about being able to find out where you are and when you're there, it provides just that much more information that a bank can use to better target and better communicate with customers. And as Lynn said, you know, the key is going to be to take that and be able to customize products and make it so that what you're giving me is what Jim Marus wants and not what 40,000 people in some segment like me wants. And so you mix the simplicity with geolocational skills, and you're going to get the ability to have immediate interaction where if you walk into a branch, which I, for one, don't think there's going to be too many of those around in 5 to 10 years, any transaction you have, you're going to have that ability to have immediate interaction through your mobile device or in person that says, here's something that you probably are going to be interested in the financial services world. And I think on top of that, the financial services realm of what that is going to expand greatly. I think we're seeing the beginning of this through companies like Movin and GoBank and Simple, where they're really taking the basics of banking and saying this does not have to be so difficult. And then apply that toward the marketing world that says, and we can find out where you should go next in your customer journey without you having to do all the work.
Right. That's absolutely – it's a very different way to look at it. And, of course, the behavioral context of this, the data requirements for this. We're talking about a very different competency. So just going around the table again for each of you to sort of close out the show in the last couple of minutes we've got, just 30 seconds, you know, what would be, if you were in the banking or financial services space right now, where would you be investing? James?
I would definitely be investing in an open platform that allows a whole range of different types of developers and inventors to come up with more human personal ways to interact with your money.
Sandboxing and iteration and
exactly.
Experimentation.
Absolutely.
Very good prototyping. Yeah. Fantastic. Lynn, where would you invest?
I would want customized rates for my mortgages, you know, kind of back to hyper-personalization. I see no reason why banking should still be in the practice of giving everyone the same rate. So that's my wish list.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting one. Wonder what the rate setters on the regulator side would say about that. And, yeah, very, very interesting. Jim?
Right now, looking at where the banking world is right now, I think one of the biggest stumbling blocks we have is the uniform way of security and privacy. And I think that until we get over that hurdle, a lot of what we talk about can be stymied. I mean, I think we're seeing in the mobile banking world and we're seeing other worlds. So that, you know, if we look at credit cards, they're not a very secure device in and of themselves. But with the guarantees and with security process that's been put in place, they're used by everybody. And I think what I've invested in right now, I'd probably go back a little bit and not look as forward and say, you know, what can we do from a uniform technology standpoint that's going to allow people to feel secure with mobile and online transactions?
Fantastic. So James, Lynn, Jim, thank you all very much for joining us this week on Breaking Banks. I think the one message I take away from all of this is if you think things are going to be the same and you're going to be able to just keep doing things the same way from a sales funnel or an engagement perspective, you're in for a very rude shock, because this is going to be disruptive and it requires a completely new skill set. Thanks for joining us, guys, and thank you to the audience.
Thanks,
for listening once again to Breaking Banks. I hope you guys join us again next season for the show, and we can expand on these thoughts somewhat more. Thanks very much. You've been listening to Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.